Stay curious.
I'm Casey Lanko.
And I'm Tim Johansson.
And welcome to Psychology at Work.
With the deeper way, there is always more. In times of sharing and processing, the first response is rarely deep enough, rarely insightful enough, and rarely gets to the heart of an issue.
Encourage people to go further. Use the skills of probes, silence, and open-ended questions to facilitate deeper exploration. A deeper way.
Foundational tenet number 4. All right, Tim, we are back for another exploration into and a deeper way tenet.
One might see a deep dive.
You might. So as you know, I like to do a quick review, catch us all up. So we were being safe. Mm-hmm. Then we were being patient. Mm-hmm. And once we were being patient, we were remembering that it's going to be uncomfortable. We want to get used to discomfort. Yep. Now that those three are laid down, we can stay curious.
Yes.
I was looking at our Instagram stories that we have, that when we kind of flip back and forth and then we save them in the highlights under Tim and Casey. Do you know how many times we talk about this tenet, stay curious, in the Instagram stories?
How many?
A lot. It's actually, I should count because it's this one and the next one, which we won't talk about today. Mm-hmm. We reference most often.
It's almost like we're staying curious.
Indeed. Indeed. With a deeper way, there is always more. I want to actually start this discussion by asking you, because you talk about this often and well, the idea of curious and sort of what that is compared to its opposite, friend.
Right. The opposite of curiosity is certainty. Mm. And it's closed off from the possibility of not knowing. Certainty is closing off the possibility that I might not know.
Yeah.
Curiosity is turning on the possibility that I might not know. And it's kind of like a switch, which is it on or off? But I think it this idea of being open to the possibility of not knowing or closed to the possibility of not knowing, right? And it actually speaks to our two different neurological systems that are at play, speaks to self-protection or connection, right? Speaks to this instantaneous way of evaluating our environment as a threat or not, right? And and so we need, at times when there is an actual threat, we need that fight or flight system. We need that certainty system to maintain and stay alive. And it's working. It means our brain is functioning and it's working to keep us alive. Right. So that kind of deciding, I know what that thing is, right? If that thing is an actual threat, we need to know that it's a threat so we can do something. Like, our brain is actually designed to figure that out.
Right. And
that's one system.
Once we've sorted that out, though, sort of in, you know, leaning a little bit back into 10-3, which is, oh, this isn't unsafe. Right. It's just uncomfortable.
Yes.
I actually think that when I find moments of feeling the urge to protect myself or sort of evaluating if something is safe or uncomfortable, I actually think it's really helpful to intentionally and consciously be curious.
Yes. over and over and over.
Over and over. And even like exploring my own, like, why am I having this super big reaction right now? Why am I feel like I'm terrified right now?
Right.
Why is my affect rising right,
right.
now? Because mine never does. But anyway, I'm just kidding. And there's almost like a, I'd be curious your experience of this. When I literally do like a little, huh.
Yeah.
For to myself. And there's almost this like release of some of that bigness of the emotionality of the moment. And like, let me channel my energy into being curious. Because I think what was coming from me a moment ago, I think the opposite of that, then we often channel it into judging.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you can lean into the, huh, I wonder what that's about. You almost can't judge it. It's amazing.
Well, to tenet one, you can't, you actually can't judge it. You're absolutely right. Because if you're curious about it, by nature of what that means, you aren't letting fear be in the driver's seat,
right,
of what you're examining. Fear might be present still, but it's not in the driver's seat.
Right.
I think that very first word in the tenet, stay, is a wonderful reminder. Stay there. Even more than, you know, be safe is how am I, but stay.
Sort of stay calls us to be place. Present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, because the first sentence here is one that is constantly playing in my head. With a deeper way, there is always more.
Yeah.
There's a phrase, so you know, my original background in education,
mm-hmm.
and sort of in, you know, teaching and learning pedagogy 101, when you're talking about how you ask questions, how do you encourage exploration, brainstorming in the classroom, you're taught the phrase, what else?
Wow.
Which is very different from anything else.
Oh.
Right? It's very different, because with what else, the assumption is that There's more. And there's, you could ask what else a limitless number of times.
Yeah.
And I always think of that because it is, you know, what else? Blah, 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 blah. What else? And it highlights sort of, I guess, the practical skill side of this tenet, which is there's always more.
I think with that, what's coming up for me is I have just learned this because I've heard you say what else a lot.
Mm.
Anything else actually puts somebody into this level 3 dilemma. Do I reveal this thought I have or do I not? And anything else lets me, no, I'm not gonna. It actually kind of, it's like, it just makes it threatening to reveal something.
Yeah, it's a very
different question. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, it's a very different question, because the question, and we're getting real technical here.
Yeah.
But that question, if you're literal with it, it's almost a challenge.
Yeah.
Which is, well, is there really anything else?
Right.
Or can we move on?
Anything else? And then the mind goes, well, nothing that's important.
Right.
Nothing that matters.
Right.
It's just my little old idea.
Right.
It's not really there, right? Ooh, that's amazing. Just that change, that subtle word actually creates an erasure moment. Not, it's not saying it's erasing, but anything else, and there might be a thought there. And we, no.
Yes, because then you have to, what you have to do, and it's all happening so fast, right?
Oh, yeah.
But what you have to do is make a secondary decision.
Yeah.
Right? You first have to determine, well, is there anything else? And is it important and valid and all that kind of, like you're saying.
Right.
Rather than with what else, it's just, oh, well, here's what else. But you don't have to make another decision to determine, is this something I should actually share?
Right. And that's uncomfortable. We're not sure what we think about if we're going to ask the right thing, or that thing that's there might not be all that important or whatever. And actually in that moment, we meaning the person who, because we've all been there, decided to the anything else question to not share the thing they were sharing, wanting to. We've erased ourselves and we've stopped staying curious.
Yeah. So this idea, there's always more. Always is a strong word, and we certainly mean it. In times of sharing and processing, which is most any time, the first response, rarely deep enough, rarely insightful enough, rarely gets to the heart of an issue. I think that if people can sort of just sustain the truth of this tenet,
yeah,
which is basically just memorize what else, say more and tell me more when you're interacting with someone, you would be shocked what you can help people discover.
Yeah.
And it's really for anyone. And so, of course, you can do this with yourself. Just ask yourself, you know, if you're reflecting, well, what else? But I actually think this is more effective when you're engaging with someone else. And even in sort of brain, it doesn't even have to be like development,
right?
Self-development, like even in brainstorming, like, you know,
right.
What else? What other ideas? Because I'm trying to make a point and I haven't gotten even close. I think the reason, part of the reason we developed this tenet was, I think in our society, we're so used to transactional interactions,
right?
Which is not necessarily interacting to explore and discover, or to even get to the truth, quite frankly, but just
often to check it's a box. To keep away from the truth,
right? And when I'm watching, like, you know, like the news or journalists or some kind of interviews, I get so frustrated because, and this isn't a comment on anyone in particular, but if they would just do like two or three more rounds of say more, trying to not use an inappropriate phrase, but if you let people talk long enough and just stay out of the way,
the truth comes out.
The truth will come out.
Yes.
It just stop trying to control the conversation, you know, and.
Well, it begs the question.
Yes.
For anybody, do I want the truth to come out or not?
Oh, well, that's good. Right.
Right. And
that's a really good piece to add to that.
And let's stay on the affirmative here, right? Yeah. Staying curious is like the best way to make friends.
Well, yeah.
Right. And what's actually going on that spiritual dimension, that felt sense is, oh my gosh, this person's curious about me.
Right.
They're interested in me. Oh, that feels amazing. That feels good. That feels great. Wow.
Yes. Right. I'm always shocked because I have this experience quite a bit where I'll kind of be interacting with someone casually or that I don't really know all that well, kind of getting to know whatever. And I'll just ask what I have felt is kind of a benign question. And they have like this response, which is, that's a really good question.
Mm.
Like no one has ever inquired to that degree. And I think the point of it is not to brag about asking questions, but we're just not used to having beyond the surface inquiry from
people. Right. So in times of sharing and processing, the first response, rarely deep enough, rarely insightful enough, rarely gets to the heart of an issue. I think we, again, want to remind ourselves, do we want to get to the heart of the issue?
Well, I think that's a really right? good point.
And I know it's a closed-ended D-word question, but...
I'll allow it.
But it hits right... So what about the heart of the issue might be a little bit too scary or too uncomfortable or too whatever, right? And that's for self-exploration or in relating with others, right? You can tell when someone doesn't want to talk about something.
Yeah. Well, and I think I like the point because I think as the person with the helper hat on, or again, in any relationship, if we're having difficulty staying curious and exploring, right? I think such a really good point, which is, what am I afraid that they're going to discover?
Right.
Or if I'm allowing the surface response and not pressing. Right. Pressing is too aggressive of a word, but just staying curious.
Right.
You know, what else? You know, is it potentially that I'm a little worried about what they're going to say?
As the helper.
Right.
Yeah.
Or any relationship.
Right.
Right. And right. To me, that's based in my insecurity. Right.
Absolutely. So
if I'm insecure about our relationship, I'm probably not going to keep asking what else, because I would venture that it's usually not based on reality, but I'm telling myself a story about what you're going to say and I'm too scared to hear it.
Mm. You nailed it. Of why staying curious is so hard.
Yeah.
Because it takes courage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's actually the next sentence. Encourage people to go further. Right. Yeah. We cannot be encouraging, meaning giving courage to someone else, without our own.
No.
We have to have it to give it. And I think it sums it up exactly. When we lose our curiosity, right, it's because our fear is there. Our fear.
Yes.
Maybe about what they might say or what we might find out or what they might say about me or who. I mean, it's all the what if stuff.
Well, I think we should say, you know, we've been on this sentence for a while, but it's really the meat of it. In times of sharing process, the first response is rarely deep enough, rarely insightful enough, rarely gets to the heart of an issue. Because
yes,
the first response is usually a defense.
Yes.
And that's, I hate that we have to keep saying this, but that's not a judgment.
No.
That's just how we're wired. Most often, sometimes for very valid reasons, we're not in a spot to open things up.
Right.
So, all right, let's just say this and then so we can move on.
And I think it's perfectly highlighted in, at least in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? We say, how you doing? Whatever.
Right.
Kind of as a greeting.
Right. Fine. Yeah.
Fine.
And that's all.
Everybody's always
right. Right.
Even like when we just are in the greatest place and like we are over the moon about something great that just happened and someone says, how you doing? Fine.
Well, you need to be humble. And,
yeah. Or, you know, maybe we might say, good. Thank you.
Right.
Right.
Oh, but, good. Wow.
Yeah. Well, look at you doing good over there.
Yeah.
Thinking you're all better than everyone.
Yeah. And I know we're probably confusing the listeners because we keep flipping hats and roles. So when you're in the helper hat, I suppose you wouldn't be in it. Well, I suppose you could be in it when you have it on. To know that typically first responses are more so in the beginning of these kinds of relationships, they're often unconscious defenses, right? So it's not even that I'm trying to avoid it and inherently consciously. It's just that's how we're wired. Like, yeah, I'll say this to evade the question or the probe. Maintaining that safety, because that's crucial in all these other pieces, and just giving that. And we're already projecting into the next sentence here, but that invitation. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
What else could it have been? Yeah. And it's even if you ask a simple question, you know, how are you feeling?
Right.
Well, you know, a little frustrated. Well, what else? Just
right.
Keep going. And I think, and I certainly am aware of this from my own experience of being trained and then in teaching graduate students, there's something that comes up when we're trying to stay curious, which is our own discomfort, because there's some weird thing that beginning helpers, we'll just kind of use that language. So whether you're a newer leader, whatever, it feels odd. We'll just validate that. It feels odd to keep saying, tell me more, or what else, when it feels like they've already answered your question.
Yeah. I think it ties to, for a lot of folks, and I can relate to it, this idea that we have of competence.
Yeah.
It's a false idea, but I have to know what is going on for that other person.
Yes.
And somehow I have to know it so that I can help them see it. And I think that really is, it feels subtle, but it's actually there's a huge chasm between that and actually staying curious. Because mm-hmm. being curious is actually saying, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know all of it, right? There's more that I don't know. And the pull to know fully is also really strong, can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it can show up here. And so we can be asking lots of questions from a very uncurious place.
Yes.
From a certain place. And
yes.
We can be asking things. We can even be practicing the skills of probes and silence and open-ended questions, but from a place that isn't curious. It's from a place of, I know what it is. I'm just going to have to help them find it.
Yes.
And I can totally relate to this. When I'm in that spot and I'm asking all these questions, there is a noticeable different feeling that's present in the interaction.
Yes.
A noticeably different feeling. And I'm asking all the right questions, right? I'm even saying them empathically, but I'm very, if I'm really to be honest with myself, when I've been in those places, I'm actually not being curious.
No, because you have an agenda.
Because you have an agenda.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think that what I'm trying to highlight here is both people know it.
Yes.
Both people feel it. Even the person with the agenda knows in their body that they're not curious. They're asking questions.
If they're honest with you.
And it's scary. It's scary. It can be scary to be honest about that.
Right, right.
That I'm actually mansplaining you right now with questions.
Right, right. You can feel the energy and who is controlling the conversation. And what it turns into is an interrogation rather than sort of a curious, yep. explorative conversation, basically. Yep. And what I always tell my students and our facilitators is, when you are in that role of, you know, being the curious listener, you shouldn't be working harder than the other person.
Right.
In fact, you know, sort of in the therapy world, we talk about the 80-20 rule.
Right.
Like the client, the other person, should be talking at least 80% of the time, which means anytime they take a substantial break, you just throw in a, say more about that, and then you're done, you get out of the way. But, you know, peppering people, and I've certainly talked on here before, I think about my disdain for closed-ended questions. But this proves the point.
Right.
Right. When you are peppering people with closed-ended questions, not only is it not going to help anyone discover anything, you have to work at least twice as hard.
Mm-hmm.
So
at least.
At least. You know, so let's say, you know, just as a very simple example, let's say you were curious about what someone had done over the week. Well, someone who is obsessed with knowing and controlling the conversation and dominating and all those things, they're going to go like this. Well, did you work outside? Did you have a nice meal? Did you go out to eat? And all the person can do is give yes or no responses. And the more no's you get, the harder you have to work. Right.
As the interrogator.
Yes. Or you could just say, tell me about your weekend. And then get out of the way. That's a place of genuine curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You used the word, I just said it again, but interrogation. Right.
Yeah.
And that really isn't an inflammatory word there.
Mm.
It's because it's what it is. We have systems of punishment that we live in, right? And don't hear me say anarchy. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not what I'm advocating for, right? But we create all sorts of systems of punishment and powers in there, and we use my power to punish, and I have the authority to punish you. And so what happens, though, to the brain when it's simply immersed in that kind of system,
mm-hmm.
and only that kind of system, is when we get to these moments where we've had an adverse impact on someone, somebody got scraped, what happens is, and that person has the courage to share their truth about the impact. When we're in a punishment system, our first response reaction to that is to say, well, I didn't mean to. Right. It's to say, I didn't mean to hurt you.
Yeah.
And that's a very useful technique in a system of punishment to mitigate the punishment.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to. And if I can convince that party that I didn't mean to, they're going to lower the punishment. That's what it's there for. I didn't mean to, right?
Yeah.
But what happens in this kind of interacting, and if it's only that kind of interacting, well, I've just erased that other person's experience in an attempt to mitigate my punishment.
Right.
When in fact, they probably weren't even coming to share that with me to punish me.
Right.
They were coming to share that, to share their truth and to be validated and to be heard.
Yeah.
And so why this fits here, because it just goes on. The cycle goes on. Don't, you know, let's interrogate each other to figure out who's at fault. And then once we figure that out, we'll go to, well, I didn't mean to mitigate this, the punishment that's coming. And we just sit in that, and we create all these courtrooms, these courtroom relationships.
Yep. Yep.
Right. And I really think it's because we don't want to look at the heart of the issue. We don't want to look at what's really going on.
In sort of the daily relational aspects, it's not even really about the punishment. It's trying to protect our sense of who we are. I can't sit with the idea that this person thinks this about me. So I need to, you know, try to control what they're thinking about me so that I can feel secure.
What I'm struck with here is what you just said about, we can't sit with the fact that we think someone's thinking that about me.
Yeah.
And it's wired into our punishment system too.
Yeah. Well, and it begs the question, what's that? Meaning, what thinking that about me?
Right. What is that?
We're jumping to a story that they're not thinking.
They're not right. Right. And
which is, you know, that I'm a monster.
Right.
They're probably not thinking that.
Well, and if they are,
yeah.
Why am I in why am I interacting with them? Like
right.
And I don't mean that flippantly.
No,
but I genuinely mean, what am I getting out of this? Yeah. And right. like you think about you, because I think there's an answer to it. Right. And you can, there is a reason we're staying in a relationship that's like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it might be tied to another insecurity.
Likely.
Right. Yeah. I think it just, it highlights the point. Stay curious.
Yeah.
There's always more. There's always more.
Just give yourself a little, huh?
Huh.
Wonder what that's about. It's amazing.
Wow.
Works every time. Huh. Mm.
I know we are getting to the end here and we've kind of talked about it already, but it takes a lot of, it takes courage and compassion to be with others. And it stems from our own self-compassion and our own courage to look at ourselves.
Yeah. And there's a skill to this one in particular. And I'm really kind of reflecting in this moment about sort of the work that I've done on myself. And I think this tenet, of course, in the three leading up to it, because they build on each other, as we've talked about. But, you know, those moments when we have the urge to go into self-protection, those moments when we have the urge to get defensive, those moments mm-hmm. when we have the urge to go to level zero, it's all the same thing, whatever language you want to use. You can build the muscle of, rather than going into, right. you know, DEFCON 4 and launching the defense systems, pull on the, It really does work. Because I think, as we talked about at the beginning, all that energy that could be channeled into your armor, all that energy that could be channeled into judging yourself and others, all that energy that could be put into throwing bombs, all the things that we all do when we're in self-protection, it can be put into simply exploring.
Right.
What's this about right now? And it really, and you know, speaking as a non-emotional, so I'd be curious what your perspective is. I just feel like it really goes a long way in sort of effectively pausing reactions that we might later regret.
Mm.
What do you think?
I think, yes, absolutely. I was trying to think about from the where does the emotional dimension kind of come into play here?
Well, I think in the moment, to me, that's the whole triggering
point, right?
Which is, you know, we know we're having the urge to protect ourselves when our affect starts to rise.
Yep.
And we can ride that out and follow that. I have to find a word to describe that kind of energy, because I feel like when I talk about it, it sounds like I'm saying that it's bad, but I'm not intending to. See, we're just doing the thing now. Don't punish me.
No. I'll mitigate your punishment because you didn't mean to.
But I'm trying to characterize the kind of emotional experience, which tends to be unpleasant. Right. It doesn't feel good.
Right.
Which is why we try to get rid of it and do something with it.
Right.
So, but rather than riding that wave of negative emotion, is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't mean that it's bad to have the emotion. Don't hear that, people. The emotion is just information.
Right.
And when we ride it out, meaning sort of, I'm picturing like a surfboard.
And yeah,
like,
okay.
Like go with it into and double down on the negative experience of the emotionality, yeah. we often channel that into the self-protective layer, and right. and then we do things that we later regret,
right,
to ourselves and others.
Yeah.
And to mitigate that, when you feel that urge, you know, when the surfboard's coming up, mm-hmm. it's not really a very good analogy, because the surfboard, you do come down naturally, which if you let emotions happen, that's what does happen.
I think this picture of a wave of emotion is very helpful.
It's yeah.
And in it, what am I? I'm still able to make a choice.
Yes.
Right. And I think that urge to protect oneself, there is for everybody, there's an emotional component to that urge.
Absolutely.
And it's like you said, it's information, and it's actually, I think, staying present to where is that emotion coming from and what's it telling me?
Yeah.
Right.
That's the huh.
And I feel really pricked right now.
Right.
I'm feeling pricked. I'm feeling hooked. I'm feeling yep. scraped. I'm feeling whatever words you want to use. Right. But, and it really sucks and it hurts and it yep. feels like this. Staying there is that takes courage.
Yeah.
Right. To look at your whole heart when it's hurt.
Yes.
Right. Because what we do autonomically, instantaneously, 0.00002367 seconds fast is not I'm hurt, I'm hooked, I'm pricked. It's you're mean, you did this,
right.
you hurt me, you yelled at me, you yeah. you caused it.
The wave right? becomes a tsunami.
Yeah. And I think to layer on your piece here of the high emotionality, then it's like gas on the fire.
Right.
And it's more and more and more. And you and
well, I think part of the gas for that is when we go into self-protection and we stay in it, it gets worse and worse, because we know the shame of staying in it. I don't have quite the right yeah. mechanisms, but you know what I mean? Because we're doing these things, whether it's in our head or externally, whatever, you know, but that self-protective state, yep. all of a sudden everyone else must be a monster. So right. I can kind of feel okay.
Right.
But I deep down, I know that's not right.
Right.
So the shame of being in it and staying in it and doubling down on that energy is the gas,
I think. It's gaslighting.
Yeah, right.
It really is. I mean, that's like...
And it's such a horrible place to be yeah. because your body is still saying you have to stay here because this is the safest place to be right now.
Right.
But that's only because the shame is lying to you.
Mm.
And it that's why it takes courage to get out of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. Mm. Are we still talking about stay curious?
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, to put a point on it, right?
Yeah.
Are we going to stay curious about all of it, or are we going to stay in that self-protection and everyone's a monster and I'm certain that they are?
Right.
I mean, it this curiosity thing is, it's really hard.
Like, yeah, it's not impossible. You just have to go, huh?
It's
telling you guys, practice.
Yeah, it's a skill that can absolutely be built.
But I want to be really clear. I'm not even being facetious. I'm being very literal.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally, go, and go with that.
Yep.
Then use the skills of probes, silence, and open-ended questions to facilitate deeper exploration. Now, of course, if you are in a deeper way certified facilitator. During certification week, we talk about these skills and what they all are. And we're, of course, not going to go into all of that right now. But I'd like to talk just real briefly about this idea of silence. You know, silence is a therapist's best friend, and thereby one of the most helpful things we can do for others is to remain silent. And I always think of that as staying out of the way. We often jump in to interject or ask another question or say something at the worst times, right? Right when someone is on the verge of maybe discovering something or realizing something, but we're too uncomfortable with a few seconds of silence, so we ask another stupid closed-ended question. What about this?
Here's how I've come to here's how I've come to think about this thing of silence. If we think of the spiritual dimension, right? Think of like a string that's connecting each of us.
Yeah.
And when the other person, when we're being silent around something where that person's exploring further, they're going in their mind to a place that's uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it's, and they're sitting there challenging the thing that they just said, right? Sitting with it, working on it, working on it. And that string is sending messages across it that they're, that this is uncomfortable. Right. And when we interrupt the silence and we break it,
yes,
we're not sitting, we're not able to sit with their discomfort that they're feeling, and it's being transmitted.
Yes.
And we're going, oh, I'm uncomfortable. Was it this?
Right. And in doing so, robbed them of the opportunity to discover something that they were perhaps on the verge of discovering.
Yeah. Thief. On purpose, deserving of punishment.
At best, selfish, because we make it about us. Like, stay out of the way. Stay out of the way. Stay curious.
With a deeper way, there's always more. In times of sharing and processing, the first response is rarely deep enough, rarely insightful enough, and it rarely gets to the heart of an issue.
Encourage people to go further. Use the skills of probes, silence, and open-ended questions to facilitate deeper exploration. A deeper way.
Foundational tenet number 4.